All right, everybody, here's what it's all about. We're not here just to holler and shout, because we can all be written in, but we can also be written out. So hold the pace, keep the faith, win the race, stand firm and stout, because we can all be written in, but we can also be written out. But not tonight. Oh, no, you know what day it is. You know what time it is. And this is BBSRadio.com. And this is the Mission Possible Radio Hour. And I am your host with the most, with the toast, here on my over in Europe right now. It's July 7th, but today is still July 6th. So here, hail to the chief. You know, he's another year older, and we're more deeper in debt. I guess that's the way you could look at it. I had Madam Sativa do a reading on the president, and I will be giving you the murky news. Oh, for him, it's good. So, you know, when you look at the nine and diamonds having a good time, it means somebody had to lose, and I wonder who that could be. But, you know, with it being this here, the 4th of July weekend, and I'm not quite sure exactly what that means to America anymore. It was to be a declaration of independence, but every time you go to the gas station pump and you put the gas in there, you can remember the boss told you this time last year the gas prices was going up, and we giggled because at that time it was like, I think we were looking at highs of around $3.50, and now it's beyond that, and we know what's going on. And I thought I was feeling just a little bit sentimental. I take a sentimental journey, and I thought I'd in the first part of this hour, because I remember the 4th of July. I remember in my town, Englewood, New Jersey, where I grew up, it was a big thing, and it would end with us all getting in the car and going over to some stadium. I can't remember now. It's all fuzzy. And we would watch the fireworks. I don't do those things anymore, and yet I know, and I'm finding that less and less people are doing it. There are very few people that want to pollute the atmosphere while showing off, and especially since in these times of economic distress, not many people want to flitter away their precious dollars on fireworks and those kind of things, and there's other ways to make children happy. So I'm always happy to see the decline of the expression of this patriotism in the form of fireworks coming through. So I'd like to extol America. This was an even more safer and saner 4th of July for me and mine and yours too, truly. It was. I don't know if you experienced that. If you listening to this radio show and want to send a shout out and tell me what it was like to be around in your neighborhood for 4th of July, just chime on in. I hear the buzzer. I will give it up to you. But at this point, I'm going to do a little editorializing, because this is the time, you know. I guess the Declaration of Independence was an editorial, serious one, you know. Hey, we ain't going to take this no more. What was it they were going to say? No more getting in my business. That's why I'm not going to take no more. That's what they were saying to George over there in England. And now, you know, we saying it somewhat to government. Get out of my business, get out of the money business, get out of the health business. You know, what is it that you need to do is pay that debt that you keep on going on up, and we don't want to help you do that no more because you didn't talk to us about these things. And I guess that's why on this day I want to talk a little bit about what it was like to be me and to grow up and to be. And I wrote this piece, and I thought I'd share it with you this evening. It's called The Dissolution of a Powerful People, and it's written by Citizen X. X, that's me. You know, I kind of use those female chromosomes to describe my plight here in this here Saha world. Okay, so this goes like this, and I'll tell you when it's over, because you know when it's over, because I go, the end. When policies are murky or in dispute, there is always room for defiance. It was quoted by Roosevelt, quote, every movement starts with the lunatic fringe, unquote. I ask, what is the cost of prejudice? D.G., my father, defined prejudice as an emotional thing, he said. It's a rigid attitude when it comes to dealing with things like freedom and equality, people were conditioned to respond in a certain way towards people not like them, you see. You could call it conditioning to a certain kind of stimulus in a certain way, plain and simple. You know, prejudice involves misjudgment. Prejudice attempts to put an individual or group in its place. It is my duty in life, as it was my father D.G.'s mission, to delve into the discriminatory and prejudicial nature of the U.S. government and other institutions. And by nature, I mean not just what they do, but why. When we link all of the known and partially known, we will, as a team, illuminate the world citizens to the exciting possibilities of a lasting victory over arrogant people who dare to go up against God's divine plan. I want to express now how deeply honored I am to be able to be reading this at this very moment to all of you out there in BBSRadio.com land. Like a woman poet, Pat Parker, said a long time ago, she was a poet of the 60s, movement in black, movement in black, no turning back, movement in black. And it was set in motion in the year, I believe, 1967. You know, no one can know where they are going unless they know exactly where they have been and exactly how they arrived at their present place. For a week in July, during the hot summer of 1967, the name Englewood, New Jersey, my hometown, was probably mentioned more often by the world news media than at any other time before or since. Nonetheless, the psychological fallout from that week was an important element in the profound social and political changes which Englewood underwent in the 60s and 70s, and me too. What happened in Englewood was, according to a report of the Governor's Select Commission, a, quote, a racial disturbance, unquote, not a race riot. But it happened at a time, and the same general time, as far more serious events were going down in Newark and to a lesser degree in other parts of New Jersey. Prior to July of 1967, and this is research that I did, Englewood had developed a comprehensive plan for riot control. Now, this is, I'm digressing here, so I'm off my essay, and I'm just for a moment want you to remember this, is that this is where you get the pattern, even back in 1967, of how it works. If you develop a comprehensive plan for riot control, then you must then test it. You must then use it, especially when someone believes that there is a chance that there may be a riot. Now, okay, keep that. So, prior to July of 1967, Englewood had developed a comprehensive plan for riot control involving assistance to its police department from the county police as well as other departments throughout the county. Now, I grew up in Englewood. Again, I digress, because when I went to look, because at the time I was a teenager, and of course I saw these things going down as a teenager, going down from the porch of my house at 340 Shepherd Avenue, Englewood, New Jersey, and my father being the dispatcher who would be sending the ambulances, being on call, the things that were going on and where they were happening. It wasn't in my street, it was around a bar, a local bar that was on a street corner called J. and William Street. And it was here that African American men would congregate, okay, for lesser of a thing. And quoting a commission report, it states that, quote, several Englewood citizens who later testified believed that the police buildup was an immediate cause of the disturbance, unquote. At 8:30 p.m. that night, an alarm went off in a food market on 8:30 p.m. that night on William Street, apparently because a stone had broken its window. Within minutes, a 20-man line of police armed with 4-foot riot sticks cordoned off J Street, dispensing the crowd. Looting took place at 2 markets in the area, and several store windows were broken on Palisade Avenue. On the 4 subsequent nights, as the police continued to patrol the area, fire, bombing, looting, and vandalism took place, but there were no further major confrontations. As these events were taking place, a hotly fought political campaign was underway, with the housing as the main issue. You see, federal assistance had been sought and granted for its removal and for the relocation of its residents to new public housing, but on the condition that a portion of the new housing be located outside the predominantly black Fourth Ward. Englewood's Republican leadership had rejected this condition, whereas their Democratic opponents supported a new site in the Second Ward, which is today Rock Creek Terrace. The truth of the matter, white America was losing control of their cities and financial centers. They had run away, and now they want it back in. With the rise of electoral and street power among blacks, the nerve centers of the oppressor's empire were imperiled. They were faced with their own prejudice, and running away only exacerbated the polarity between the races. By 1967, a year of many racial riots, the human support resources in America's big cities were out of step with the times and the need. Discrimination and full-blown prejudice in the private and government sector had diverted resources to suburbia and Vietnam. In the inner cities, training, experience, and skills were badly matched with the pace of emerging minorities and female heads of households. White America hoped that the economically disadvantaged could not compete in the moving to the new metro, which they built out in the countryside, which they took their taxes with them. This fight accelerated the government's abandonment of inner cities. It was up to the leaders of that time to find lasting solutions, create a way to utilize human beings and brainstorm more effective techniques for giving the disadvantaged what they needed to compete. In the 50s, the pioneers of the atomic age thought that an ever-expanding, exploding metropolis would experience permanent growth. This was almost a vision of the Fourth Reich. Yet, the urban unrest of the 60s that I lived through only told of the inner city collapse. The 1968 Kerner Report on Civil Disorder could only react to the inbred seething crisis of the racist industrial system. Since the commission had no intention of dismantling the very system that created at once their wealth and this crisis, they could not only move to further protect it. A concentration of blacks created only more freedom and awareness for and of themselves, which led to the growth of their new political power, case, and point. A consequence of the July events, and that is, in November of 1967, a Democratic majority was elected in Englewood City Council, and for the first time since 1911. Which you have to understand, my father was born in that city in 1903. What I have to tell you is that my mother was raised up in that area, and she was born in 1909. And what I mean by mother and father, these are the people who were given guardianship over the boss, you see. And me, you want to know, I'm born in 1952, year of the dragon. So the things that I see and the things that I'm telling you, it may sound long-winded, but I'm the one with the hour, and this is the Mission Possible radio show. And I do this so that I can be counted among those who have been able to accept and to articulate what's really going on. You know, I've been doing a lot of research. I just got finished, and I'm recommending all my listeners to try and get themselves knowledgeable about this thing called oil. And there's a book out, someone, you know, people are always giving me or turning me on to books to read when we start talking at dinner and stuff, and I received from one of my neighbors a book that needs to be back on July 11th, which I will do and probably will check it out myself again. But it is a very simple book to read, and I would encourage everybody to read. It's called Crude, you know, The Story of Oil, Sonia Shaw. And it's a very thin book, and it was copyrighted, I do believe, in 2004. Yeah, 2004, by herself, and I believe probably it was a paper, but it makes a mighty good reading. And what I have this evening to talk about on this July 6, 2008, which would be the 54th episode of Mission Possible Radio, because I really am trying to become more disciplined so that as I listen back to the archives and as my students listen back to the archives, they can begin to see that I am melding and moving that which is the current news with the past news, with the mindset of the time. And that's what's important, you know. Like I was thinking about this 4th of July being what it was, and I thought back, you know, to 1992, because, of course, that was the 200th anniversary of the White House, and I was looking at it because I had seen on when I was checking my emails and things that sometimes can be diverted over into a pop-up or into something that looks interesting, like, hey, you know, and I saw this piece on the White House and how the White House lawn and the White House Park and all of the structures around the White House were in need of repair. And I thought to myself, that's interesting because there are private people who are coming forward and are starting to come together to fundraise to fix the parks. And I thought, maybe it's Mother Nature's way of telling you it's time to move. It was it's interesting when you think about Capitol Hill and when you think about D.C. being built on a swamp, it makes you wonder, just like it makes you wonder if you was in Sicily or anywhere around the coast where, you know, global warming and warming is happening, something's going on, and so things are seeping and things are being encroached upon, and so they have that going on. I thought, well, maybe with us having this new feeling, this new direction, whether it be Republican or Democrat, certainly they're not going to go in the direction of gun blast war. If they do, they're going to lose this election, because I do believe that even though we are experiencing this temporary backlash, I guess you could call it, and show of strength with the OPEC nations, that oil is up to 143 and has broken through the 144 and is predicted to go up to the 150. What does that do? It's the reason why when you go to the gas, when you pay your bills and energy bills, when you go to the store, this is the inflation. This is what they're not fixing. This is what they're not incorporating into their study, because they didn't want to spook us, you know. They think we're all a bunch of idiots and we don't understand anything, but yet they send us to college to learn things. Well, I didn't go. They didn't send me. I couldn't compete. Can you believe it? The boss checked out in high school. Ah, what a disappointment. Maybe I could have been president of the United States. Maybe I would have some answers. Maybe I'd have been dead by now if I had stood up, because you know what they say. I say it all the time. Many have been sent with a good word your way, and many you have killed in a variety of ways, and others you have mocked and locked away, America. And although I am and have been, I don't want to anymore. But yet I can see it coming, where I will be lumped into a category. For I will be seen to have in my possession that which is not supposed to be in your possession. And you know what that is? That's called wisdom. You know, the ability to see down the line means that you have clear vision. Not nuclear vision, but clear vision. And that's something that the cranks don't have. Oh, don't get me started. That's a whole nother show. But the dissolution of the powerful people, this is how they do it. And now they've dissolved America, you see. I mean, Condoleezza Rice, you know, when she entered into this whole thing of the Iraqi war, and when she decided that she was more than just a black woman, she was a learned woman, she was this kind of woman, she was a Russian scholar, a military history expert, she knew something. I said, where are all these people coming from? Are they growing them somewhere? Is there a conversion kit that you send for that allows you to change? This is the very woman who had friends got blowed up in the... I mean, how much forgiveness? I want to know. It's, these are the questions, you know. Maybe one day she'll grant me an interview and I can get to it, because at this point, it's down and out. You know what I'm saying? It's really down and out. But anyhow, we'll continue. There is a reversal and can be a backlash for all the insane playing. So then I was looking at the Sativa. Tell me what is in the cards for George. Oh, wait. I want to tell you. This book crude. Sonia Shaw, S-O-N-I-A, Shaw, S-H-A-H, Sonia Shaw, yes. You know, I sometimes get a little paranoid sometimes technically when all of a sudden things change. It was kind of staticky and all of a sudden it changes. I'm not sure if I'm even speaking to anybody. That's the faith you have to have when you're doing radio over the phone. If you lose your connection, you could just sit here and talk to yourself for the next 40 minutes or so, and and not have any show. So I guess I would hear what you call one of those dial tones. But let me get back to this book. I want to tell you, I've been studying a long time. I started out studying Onassis, because when you talk about oil, you can't do it without talking about Big O. I call him Big O. I hope that one day they'll make a movie about this man so that we can really, really put the pieces together as to who he was and how he moved and he grew from the Nazis to the Democrats to from America to Argentina to the Monaco, how he had his hands in Vegas and how he had his hands all in all of it. And he had a whole lot of very special women in his bed. Oh, yes. Worst of all, he liked to ship things. And worst of all than that, Texas, the independent state with its own foreign policy, it belongs to the United States of America, but not for long. Okay, because it sounds like the way they're expecting to do it. Their success is they're going to secede and go back to Mexico, become part of Paraguay and Ecuador. Oh, am I getting silly or what? Let me get back to the book. I was trying to make, when I was reading my trilogy, trying to understand why Cheney, from the Commanders in 1991 as Secretary of Defense, why he was so hot to trot to bring the ground forces. Now, Powell, who was more experienced in fighter and inbreeder and everything, he understood why it would be cool to have the ground troops come in, because the more ground troops you have come in, the more possibilities you have for important, that which you like and which is important to you that makes money for you is the drugs. So, oh, am I saying it? Oh, yeah, I'm saying it. I'm saying if Colin Powell is best friends with Richard L. Armitage, then I'm saying, you know, birds of a feather flock together. Lay down with dogs, you'll wake up with fleas. I'm telling you, there's no way for you not to. And when you look at it now, I say to myself, want to clear the corridors again, don't you, big boys? Ain't clear again. Didn't need to, really, did you? That's what I found out in this here book, Crude, you know. 1991, I guess Saddam Hussein, he wanted America to show who they love. Who you love, he said. Who you love? How can you say you're my friend, but you're working against me? You know, I'm moving my troops around a little bit, so I'm going down here and scare my brothers half to death, but that's none of your business, because you told me, you said, your ambassador told me, Arab-to-Arab conflicts was none of your business, that you wouldn't get involved. So what does Saddam do? He goes off and he tests this situation. And everybody knows that part of the history. I mean, I know I can look back and read my writings in 1991 and my impressions on the invasion and the decision to go off to Iraq and do this. I understood what was going on because I knew back in 1987, you had this crisis in the Turkish Strait. And there was something else that was going on, too. There was the toppling of the Soviet Union. Oh, so much stuff was going on because they were all shifting and sifting through the rubble, trying to figure out where their next great conquest would be. And when I was reading Crude, I got to the part where they started talking about an area that I used to have a map back in 1848 of the Caspian Sea. And the Caspian region, and that region in Baku in Russia, the Ottoman Turkish area, they call it, and down and out. And I wondered why I had this map up on my wall. And as we marched off into the Iraq situation, into Mesopotamia, and started aligning Arab against Arab and just dividing that whole area up because it served a purpose and interest. Not digressing, but in this book it was confirmed. I have always known that Saudi Arabian oil is not as valuable as Iraqi oil. Saudi Arabian oil is full of impurities and costs a whole lot of funky money to refine. And in doing so, you have to have a whole lot more emissions going out into the world, and you have a lot more byproduct, coal tar and all other kinds of things, and then you got to figure out ways to get rid of all that stuff. It's a situation. It is a problem. Okay, so in the mid-1990s, and this would be during the Clinton administration, some seismic geological services were done, and they discovered a potential reserve of oil underneath the Caspian Sea and that area that was like, you know, like 200 trillion gallons, barrels of oil. I mean, it was outrageous how much they thought was over there. So you figure now you have this report, and by the time it becomes known, it already's been known for 5 years at least. So they go, oh, there's oil over here. Oh, let's go get it. And so they go and they set up. But to extract the oil is a 10-year process. As you come closer and you begin to drill your exploratory wells and you start to realize that which you thought was going to be your ticket to independence, that you could kick the Middle East around and you don't need their oil no more, nanny nanny poo poo to you Saudi Arabia, all of you guys can just go on because Russia and America have made a decision and we're gonna be handling this field. Now, in order to get that oil out, you have to plan ahead because Caspian Sea is a landlocked sea. See, go to Google and type in Caspian Sea. And what I really want my listeners to do is to go to Google and type in Caspian oil crash. And it's there that you will see other nations who were in line to benefit from this experience of this big basin of oil that was just there for the taking. And they all signed on. As time went on, of course, people started bailing, Stat Oil or State Oil, that would be Norway. They got busy in the Northern Sea. See, all my listeners, you already know these things. And if you don't, then understand, there's so much to articulate in terms of what's coming. You know, whew, if you was to go up there to the North Sea and see what you see, and if you was to go to the North Sea and then see what's under the sea, and what they want to do under the sea, and what they want to bring up, they now talking about these gases that they can harvest underneath the sea by injecting antifreeze into the seabed so that the gas will come up, and they got these big bubbles that would then catch the gas, and then these would be offshore fueling stations for the submarines and everything. Does that sound like peace to you? Now, why do we have a Navy? Oh, please don't let me get started here. Anyhow, I see a correlation, and I will be speaking on this in later shows. I just wanted to whet an appetite for this, and for those of you who are fortunate enough to be able to go to the library soon or to order this book, it will be a good investment because you can turn other people onto it. Because when you start to look at this book in terms of an innocent study, scholarly study on the story of oil, you can begin to put together the major players and what might have been occurring right around 2001 when them trade centers came down, Enron crap collapsing, the shifts of the need to go after Sodom. Something makes me think that George Bush Sr. knew at a very early age that there was this oil in the Caspian Sea region, and Ronald Reagan and all of them. So they started parlaying that knowledge and clearing out all the people that they needed to clear, and then recognizing all these splinter groups as Yugoslavia was detonating into a whole bunch of independent countries. You see, America, it is isolationist thinking that is a mentality, not a foreign policy or a policy of America to mind their own business, to tend to their own business, to look in their own backyard for their successes and failures. There is a group of people that I guess everybody on BBSradio.com know, and most people who are in the know that there's somebody else pulling these strings, and how they pull them and how they, the decisions they make, lead us further and further down the line to either wellness or sickness or economic health or economic depression. It is true, and there isn't too many ways for us to escape the spiraling, out of control inflation that is getting ready to slap us like, some people would say, a cold wash rag in the face. That's what I would call it myself. But me knowing that these men have another plan, some call it a scam, but for them it's a lifestyle they know well, because they know how to cheat the people, you see, and they know the alternative to luxury is hell. This is the boss, and this is Mission Possible Radio. If Renee is out there listening, Madam Sativa has done your a little service, and if you call in, she will give you some information, if not tonight, next week, but that's the way this story goes. I like to get to know my listeners and all, and if they carry on and over and under, they will get to the boss, you see what I'm saying, because I understand. I'm under it all. This week I've been busting out this the Bob trilogy. I'm stuck on it because I cross-reference it. I mean, I'm telling you, I would love to see these three books entered in to the congressional record. I would like to make this mandatory reading. Hurry up right now. Everybody get everybody. I know, the boss knows, and you know too, that Bob ain't telling all. But see, if we serious about getting to this whole point of lying and truthfulness in government, is it something we just going to have to elect in and then excuse all that that has gone past and say, oh, well, you know, there's bad boys sometimes, but let them go. And I'm like, wait a minute. We've been letting them go. One of them that's in the office now in the vice president's office has been let go, has been explained away. This man who holds this office now, he's a check kiter. You see, I keep saying this. This man wrote tens of thousands of dollars worth of checks for money he did not have right then and there. That puts the whole idea of overdraft into overdrive. You know what I'm saying? This man has a habit of getting an inch and taking a mile. The kind of strong-arm diplomacy that the Secretary of Defense, then, now, and forever to be known as the VP of the century, and it's only been 8 years, but this man defined and is defining the powers of an office that was by some described as one of the most boring offices. You see what happens when you let people who are weaned and raised on corporate fascism into the American government and tell them, try and help the people, take the people. When they say help the people, they mean their people, you see. This is how they operate. Very cagey, and very tiresome and boring when you really get down to it, because it will not support and has never supported truth, you see. Now, to indoctrinate our children into this way of thinking that if you need something, just take it, as they watch, how do you explain this? As you raise up a new crop of lawyers, or as one of my friends say, crap of lawyers, as you raise them up, what law of the land will they espouse? What law of the land will be taught to them? We live in a society, American society, when we find it very easy to disregard facts. This is a truth-ism, that we do not pay attention to facts. Facts, we're antagonistic to them. They don't fit in our kind of thinking. So if you don't have facts, then the kind of justice that you can mete out is the kind of new kind of Democrat that was given to us in 1992. This may explain how Obama has now become the candidate, not yet of record, but just, you know, it's kind of like a done deal. Now, this done, well done deal is maybe a leftover from this idea about the new Democrat. Now, for those of you who have limited vision, that's only 1992 that we were handed that spiel. And in that time, there was this cracking of the Democratic Party. We saw Perot come in with the, I do believe it was the United We Stand campaign, and then we had Jerry Brown, who was had his Take Back America campaign. Now, when you look at these campaign slogans, just like when you look at Change We Need or Change Yes We Can or what other slogans that are going to be coming up and hitting us this summer and into the fall as we elect our next president, one has to really think hard about what it is that these people believe in, because at this point, I believe that these people want to tear up the Constitution in somehow or another, and if not tear it up, take the idea of its elasticity and stretch it until it is so thin that you couldn't read the fine print if you wanted to. It's a very simple document, very simple. But with everything has its little glimmers and hopes, and these big holes that they have blown into the Constitution have now come to the point where I, as a citizen here in America, I'm not quite sure what the current rights are for Ma, and I'm not quite sure exactly what they can and cannot do, you see. And that takes me out of my sovereignty and puts me into the civility. So that's why the boss, you know, stays right here in paradise. And BBS Radio does the same, right in paradise. And we come to you from paradise. And we're coming into the half. It's almost over. It's almost over. I cannot tell you how fast this time goes. So I want you all to know that this book, Crude, The Story of Oil, Sonia Shaw, has some really delicious tidbits. And when you start to cross-reference that with the commanders, and when you start cross-referencing that with Plan of the Attack and State of Denial, you start to see, and I mean, I'm writing up my book. I can't wait for us to have one of those conventions where all us Woodies come together and we start to discuss this, and maybe even Bob will come and be a, what you call, one of those keynote speakers, and we can shake him down for what he knows. I know it'll be costly because I don't think the man does anything for free. Although he did do this, and so his, you know, even though some of his books was the best seller and everything, you can get them. You can get them cheap. The books are out there. They're cheap. People read them and throw them away. I couldn't throw these three books. In fact, my books was so taggered and ragged that I had to order some new copies just so that I could keep on dealing with it. It's kind of like when I was dealing with the Watergate tapes. I had first editions. I don't care. I'll write them up and everything. Well, you save a book for it as well. You save them. You put it in your head, and you track history, and you take those names, and you find out who's still alive, and you watch them, and you watch their youngins, and you watch where their youngins go, and you watch what they do, you see. And then you can keep following them because somebody's going to pay for this mess. And I'll tell you, I don't think that it's deserving of all of us out here who didn't get to enjoy all of that evil should have to pay for it, you see. I think that the check should be sent to the man that deserves to pay it. And you know who that man is, and you know what family that is, because they the ones that want to be the shakers and the makers, and that's the Bushes, because their style of politics is they don't let nothing get by them. And even if it takes years for them to exact their revenge, they will get their revenge. And when you start following the dead bodies and the money, and when you start seeing how you see it all going, and you see them smiling, you know why George Bush is smiling, because he's planning his escape. Wouldn't be surprised if the moment he stops being president, man, they ship him off to Paraguay somewhere because you can't extradite him. Because, see, he got to go, because as soon as he becomes something other than the President of the United States, he's fair game for a lot of questions. And he don't like questions. I don't know if you've ever seen any of the interviews where he get all tight-lipped and everything, but boy, oh boy, man, you wouldn't want to be on the wrong side of Bush Jr. No, 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 no. Because he got some fanatical friends, you know what I'm saying, some tyrannical fanatical friends, and I'll tell you, and a lot of them are in foreign countries, so you wouldn't know them if they was to sneak up on you. One of my other favorite people you talk about is one of the family members by adoption that come into the Bush family, and that's Bandar. Bad, bad Bandar, he's bad boy. And I sure would love to see somebody detain him, you see. Now, you want to talk about pushing, you want to talk about pushing the envelope in state diplomacy, man. Question Bandar. Find out what he got to do with all of this, because you know what, it serves somebody's purpose, because now oil is $144 a barrel, and whether it be Arabian oil, and it's funny that we're getting ready to purchase and they're getting ready to up their production. But the final line of it is they're all falling behind. Quiet as it's kept, the technology that America has, because, you know, part of the reason. Oh, the other thing that I wanted to tell you about this book, Crude, is that she puts it in really good perspective about why it is that they were so mad at Sodom, you know. Because, see, Sodom was turning his back on the West, and he was looking towards working with the Chinese and the Russians and the French. And he was going to have them extract the oil out of the ground because the concessions was up, basically. And he was like, you know what? I don't need America. I'll sell this oil. China will buy my oil. Everybody buy them. Put the oil out on the market. It's kind of hard to say where all that oil come from. It all goes into one pipeline, goes into one tanker, and then it goes off where it is. You can't separate and say, oh, this is, oh, you can tag it, though. you can radioactively tag the oil so that you can know what region it come from, and they have started doing that. That's one of the ways they can do it. So they've thought of everything, but these are New York Times bestsellers that shouldn't be ignored. And for those of you who really, 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 really know where I'm coming from, you know why it is that I say that you should do this, because part of it is a lot of the stuff that Bob looked at was part of what we can also look at, and we better look at it quickly before they take it away from us, because they're changing all kinds of rules and regulations for, Freedom of Information Act, and now you gotta almost have a blood test to get in there to get any information, so you got to be real clever about where you go. And that's why the boss says, start reading some of the autobiographies of some of these people that came up during the Cold War. Start reading some of these biographies of the people and the movers and the shakers of the 1900s. Because these are the people that they are still serving in the trust funds. So start reading about the 40s and the 30s and Howard Hughes and what happened to all that money and Howard's organization and how the Hughes Medical Corporation, they never really fixed anything, is probably funneling money to Argentinian third-generation Nazis in countries elsewhere to pain and torture us and to find out how new pharmaceuticals will work and how these things work and that kind of thing work. I know y'all think I'm crazy, and a lot of you probably listening and chuckling and giggling and all kinds of stuff. I say, take your Prozac and hurry up and get better then, if you think that's the way it is, because I know I'm not crazy. I'm well-studied. I'm well-groomed for what's getting ready to happen. I know, and for those of you who may be thinking, this is and probably be the week for you to buy some gold if you wanted to, or get yourself some silver. The price is going down. Take that little computer and go on over to Kitco or go over to one of them and check out what is happening, folks, because you're starting to see the little glimmers and clamors and the little tears in the fabric of this whole thing, like Oz, like Wonderland, like, uh-oh, there's a blemish. Uh-oh, there's a hole. I see a hole. Yeah, I see daylight. That's how big the hole is for me. I see daylight. So what you do is you need to begin to think about currency conversion. And you better start thinking, why is it that people are happy to hold the peso and not the dollar? All right, and when you start thinking about that, you start thinking about these things. You start listening to BBSRadio.com. You start listening to Mission Possible Radio Hour. You start listening to Evident Footprint. You start listening to Insight Hour. You start listening to these shows, because these shows are going to show you the way. And they're going to have the cutting-edge kind of people on that are going to tell you where you need to go with this, because it ain't over yet. See, we get to suffer. You see what I'm saying? This ain't over by a long run. There's no one getting ready to push any buttons. Ain't nobody going to die. This is where the world gets to watch us suffer. And it's already starting to happen. So you either get wise or you get rolled over, under, get taken out. And part of that will be done just through your foolishness of your insane spending. I know that I talk about and will be talking about, because this is July, and like every July, if you listen to these shows, I always get a little misty. I was going to bash Bush on his birthday, but I said, I will remember what my father told me. If you can't respect the man who is in power, at least respect the office that he holds. And so therefore, because like I was, I went over and tried to find out what it was that would lead Obama to believe that that he had gotten support from Farrakhan. And so I went over and listened to what Farrakhan said about Obama. And gosh, I wish Farrakhan would say the kind of things he said about Obama, say them about me or about others. He was high on him, as he should be, and he hoped, and his hope for him was that he would, and that we would have, and I agree with this, and this is to be seen, that we have a better man getting ready to go into the office. By the standards of what we've seen of George Bush, my goodness, I guess somebody's baby brother in Outer Mongolia could be better than Bush has been to us, and so therefore, want you to know, we get ready to perhaps exchange a nine of diamonds for another nine of diamonds, and that in the rising, we will see a difference. Obamacare ready to celebrate his birthday. Hi. And it looks like Hillary is in his destiny chart. And this is kind of interesting because I really don't even want to get into it with you tonight about what I think about him seeking out Bill Clinton, except to know in 1992 we got Bill, and all of a sudden we got all these different things going on. At the same time, we're trying to sort out house banking scandals and post office banking scandals, and I guess you could say these were times. And at the same time, the promise was economic stimulus, economic equality, ability, more jobs. This is how Bush lost this, you know. Bill promised more jobs. So now we're looking at homelessness amongst people going up at a rapid age, and homelessness that's not necessarily looking too good, because homelessness don't look too good on the middle class and the rich, you know, but when it get there, that's what might happen. And so, you know, you have to be prepared. You must be prepared for the changes, you know. And I'll tell you, I told you a long time ago in a lot of songs that I used to sing that we have to be ready because the streets are paved with gold no longer. But I'm going to tell you, all of you out there, take them shekels, go in your drawers and pull out all those silver quarters, not silver quarters, but them phony quarters, zinc and stuff like that. And when you think about that, go back to Hoover, you know. When you think about what is in the change that you're making and how currencies go, you can see why they slide us all around. But take those zinc and copper slugs, I like to call them, and trade them in, you know, and do yourself a favor. Know this, world, that if everyone wanted to own silver, if everybody decided and woke up they was going to buy an ounce of silver, you wouldn't be able to do it because there isn't that much silver for you to own. And so you'd probably only get about a seventh of a tenth of an ounce of silver for your trouble. And even that would be worth a lot. Now, all I'm telling you is right now it's gone down. Go and watch. If it should go down like around $888, you know, $888 and maybe even $880, you better jump on it because it's just gonna go back up from there because that's the way the boys are playing it. And then you can play that way too until there is no more game to be played. But at least you might be able to outstep this, which is the invisible thief, inflation. You know, you're listening to the boss. Listening to Boss RJ, I'm encouraging you to begin to think about doing with less now, before you have to do it later, that you begin to demand of the people that are asking for your vote to tell you the truth about the state of the economy and where the United States of America is at with that there, with their trade deficits and with their spending. And, you know, the war is going to be very costly, and I just don't see us not having some kind of reaction to the whole thing. And so everybody get prepared. It's not doom and gloom. It just means if you know, you want to dance to the music, you got to pay the piper. And so for the freedom that we've enjoyed all of these years, you now get a chance to find out what it's like soon to live in need. And even here in my little community here in Paola, we're starting to see the desperation begin to become evident as the merchants are having their store windows broken, and the people that are actually doing the thievery, it's more delinquency, it's more insane, no-thinking kind of vandalism that costs the business person a lot of money, because I already found out how much glass costs, because I broke a big piece of glass and found out it ain't cheap. And if you're on an island, it ain't cheap at all. So, you know, these kind of things that happen here are an indication of something. And so I just want to make that known to you. So we I'm going to take a moment here to glance at the old clock here and see what time it is, because we may be getting down to the end of it. My father used to ask all the time, what are all these weapons for? Is it that man likes war? Is there a celebration in the nation, Did I hear someone say something about a declaration? Why are all these people dancing in the street? Is anybody free? Is there a celebration in the nation, Did I hear someone say something about a proclamation? Ha. Tell it like it is. Yeah. So the book is crude. Get it? Well, we're going to continue this conversation next week. Going to be getting into the timing, because this need to go over to Iraq and this need now to come back, and how it all going to work and play its way out in the next, you know, coming election and afterwards, and what might happen as a ramification for all of that. We got to get ready. We got to really stand up for peace, and we have to be able to tighten our belt, and we have to begin to look to when two-thirds of y'all out there get sick of this, we can begin to sit down and fix it. Because if we don't fix it, they're going to tear up the Constitution, they're going to throw away all of the laws, and they're going to dictate to us, as they are already starting to, with the help of the collusion of the political associations and law enforcement. Oh, don't get me started. Anyhow, this has been our time together, and I can only wish you one thing. I want to wish you well. And I want to wish you aloha.